Welcome to The Doctor Is Out, a podcast hosted by Sharif Vakili, investor at Polaris Partners and primary care physician at Stanford. Join Sharif in exploring the extra clinical practice of medicine as he interviews healthcare leaders who have gone from bedside to build companies, run health systems, spearhead public policy, and pursue many other paths where they lend their unique bedside perspectives.
Our guest today is the Chief Information Officer of Stanford Healthcare and Internal Medicine Physician, Dr. Michael Pfeffer. I'm very grateful to introduce today's guest. He is the Chief Information Officer of Stanford Healthcare, the former Chief Medical Information Officer, and the former Chief Information Officer of the UCLA Health System. And I can attest from colleagues who have worked with him, he is a sharp internal medicine physician as well. Dr. Michael Pfeffer, thanks for joining for our chat today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Sharif. Thank you so much for having me.
Mike, my first question is just around how you describe your job description of being the CIO of Stanford to a medical student, because you are the CIO of one of the most tech-forward health systems in the country, if not the world. Do you feel that day to day, or do you think your job is not really different just because you're in Silicon Valley?
Stanford medicine is an incredible place. And I mean, it stems from the culture of innovation, obviously the history of, you know, computing and technology that has come out of Stanford in general. So it's truly a privilege to be at a place like this and get to work with such incredible people. I mean, that's really what my job is about. It's about people and relationships and bringing people together, bringing teams together and delivering on, you know, technology solutions that are really going to advance our patient care mission, our education mission, and our research mission. And that's, in a nutshell, what I do.
So if you were to describe the career pathway and then the skill sets that are necessary for your job to be the CIO of an academic medical center, how might you explain that for somebody who looks to this path, is trying to figure out what's involved there and how they can end up getting there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, my path to become the Chief Information Officer at UCLA Health was not something that I had planned on. Like when I was in medical school, you know, I wanted to be cardiothoracic surgeon. Then I realized that that was just not going to work for me. I'm really in awe of surgeons and how they can do what they do. But I really fell in love with internal medicine and did my residency, obviously, in internal medicine and started to go into residency education. I really loved working with residents and teaching and all of that. And I still do, but just happened into informatics when the field was fairly young because I wanted to improve how we were taking care of patients, the experience for clinicians, and moving from the paper world to the computerized world. And then really started to see the potential of what this was going to be and that it wasn't going to be easy and it was going to take a long time. And it's still, we're in that journey. We haven't at all made that journey right now. So I got involved when there was an opening for a part-time physician informaticist position at UCLA to help start the journey to implement an electronic health record. And I applied for that and got it. And
could you tell me a little bit about that position? Like, what does that position involve? Did you do, I mean, I don't think back then they had bioinformatics fellowships. Did you do any preparation or training in that area ahead of time?
So I have a background in engineering. I did chemical engineering undergrad. So I love process. I love thinking through improving processes. I've, you know, had plenty of time with computers, more for fun than any formal training on like writing programs and things like that. So I was, you know, familiar with it. But the position was really about how do you implement a technology and bring it through the entire change management process, right? How do you think about clinical workflows? How do you think about decision support? How do you think about how do you get providers on board with such a massive change? And then how do you do it, hopefully, in the best way you can? And so that's what really excited me about the role. It was fairly loosely defined, but it was my entry into clinical informatics, and fell in love with it. But what I fell in love with most was the people, the relationships, the change management, the teams, the seeing all the different parts of healthcare required to make it all happen. You know, there are hundreds of incredibly talented and dedicated people behind the scenes in information technology, working every day to make things, make the technologies work and make them better for our providers and our patients. And I didn't really know that when, you know, I was a resident or medical student. That was news to me. And I didn't even know what a chief information officer was. So I really got to dive in to see how things work, and all the incredible people that are part of what makes healthcare work, basically.
Yeah, actually, on that point of changing behavior around using technology, there's this notion that healthcare in this country is stuck in the Stone Ages with respect to technology. Physicians never want to change their behavior. You can never get people to change. To what extent do you think that's true? And to what extent do you think there may be some misconceptions about that, and people may not understand necessarily, you know, that everyone does want to do the right thing, I guess. I feel like there's always been some confusion or disconnect around that. Curious if you have any perspective.
That's a great question. I mean, throughout my career, I've always found, you know, physicians to be very open to change. Ironically, I mean, yes, yeah. The statement is always, oh, you know, no one, healthcare is, you know, hard to change. There are many, many reasons why it takes a while to make big changes in healthcare, but it's not the physicians. You know, an evidence-based discussion will lead to change. I mean, we're constantly, you know, looking at new literature and new guidelines. How much did physicians have to change to work in the pandemic and treat COVID and learn from that? So I think one of the actually things I love most about the implementation was really seeing the engagement by physicians, because they wanted the best thing for their patients. But physicians are also very, you know, smart. And so you can't, you know, put in technologies that are going to make things worse without a fight. So it's good. I mean, that's what we want. We want to keep moving the needle on technologies in healthcare. So, yeah, so I think obviously, you know, using the technologies and listening to feedback are really, really important in the whole process. But I would say that, you know, clinicians for the most part are on board with change. Not necessarily, you know, some of the technologies, but definitely change.
Yeah, that's very humbling, because then the conclusion becomes maybe the technologies aren't so great as we might think. Not necessarily that people aren't adopted.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like to say that, you know, we digitize the paper world, because that's really the first step in a true digital transformation. I mean, it's really hard to go from paper to a brand new way of doing things digitally. So yeah, you digitize things. And when you digitize things, that doesn't mean things get better. All things get better. Sure, you don't have to look for the chart. That could be anywhere in the hospital, or maybe in storage somewhere, or patients are going from clinic to clinic. And so the chart, paper chart, doesn't necessarily follow them. So that's one huge win of electronic health records, right? You can access the chart wherever, whenever, on an airplane, on a boat, whatever, it doesn't matter. So that is a big win, but there are lots of other examples of where digitization has not made things easier, faster, better.
Yeah. Do you think this perspective is in part a function of your experiences at Stanford and UCLA? Do you think this might be true in other health systems in the country and the experience of other CIOs elsewhere too, around the frictions or lack thereof of getting the right technology adopted?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's not a local issue. It's a global issue, actually. I've traveled the world and spoke to informaticists and healthcare leaders, you know, all over the world. And it's the same struggles, the same challenges. What's amazing, though, is the similarity that we all want to provide better care for patients and a better experience for providers. That's been a constant, which is pretty amazing. And no matter where I've been able to travel and discuss this with leaders. So I think we know where we want to go. It's how do you get there? And is the hard part.
Yeah. When you think about, and I don't want to anchor on the last topic we're just discussing too, it could be on anything, but when you think about the responsibility of the CIO for a health system, what do you think is the most important thing for you to be able to accomplish? Like, what makes a good CIO? And what's like the most challenging obstacle that's often encountered that, you know, you wish you could just like have a magic wand to make a little bit easier for yourself that many people encounter sort of differentiates between good and excellent?
So I think, you know, the role of the CIO is a couple things. One is to make sure that we have a very high performing health IT organization with incredible talent, and we have that at Stanford. So that's amazing. And then get out of their way so they can do what they do best, right? I think the second thing is to make sure we have the voices of the customer not only being heard, but also driving the strategy of the IT organization. And that's, again, across all our missions. So our patient care mission, research mission, and education mission. And so part of doing that is to have leaders on my IT leadership team that represent those areas of the organization. And so that as we're thinking about strategy, as we are implementing and prioritizing, those voices are part of it, which is, I think, really important. Have to keep our organization safe. There's cybersecurity issues that we always need to be very cognizant of and help. And so that's a big part of how we think about things, not only protecting our systems, but also protecting our data and our intellectual property, right? So our researchers are generating, you know, incredible insights that has to be protected, as well as patient information, employee information, things like that. So making sure that what we do is safe and reliable. So we have to make sure that things are working 24/7, 365. So all those things are really, I think, part of the job, as well as in building relationships throughout Stanford Medicine and aligning what we do to the integrated strategic plan that we have at Stanford Medicine, which is pretty unique. And I love to think about how we are driving our strategies such that we enable people to be successful in the integrated strategic plan.
Yeah. Do you think your biggest pain points there are similar to what they were when you were back at UCLA?
Well, every organization has its own culture. So there's similarities in, you know, vendors and technologies, Academic medical centers have similarities in how they're structured, but also differences. And so it's really understanding the culture of the organization. And I think, so that's really where the differentiation occurs. You know, UCLA Health and Stanford Medicine, two academic medical centers, amazing places, incredible faculty, different cultures.
Yeah. How much do you spend time thinking about, I mean, maybe this is not really part of your job, but, you know, here's something and some tech solution is going to be able to make this better and let's usher in this tech solution. Is that part of your job at all?
Sometimes.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of tech solutions out there that claim to do lots of things. And, you know, how do you kind of sort through everything out there? And it comes from many directions. It comes directly from the vendor. It comes from people within the organization. It comes from people within the IT organization. And so, you know, how do you kind of look at all of this and say, okay, where should we begin to investigate and see if this could be a potential solution to a problem we have? That's pretty challenging. You know, there's a lot out there, and sometimes it's hard to really know what you're hearing what the solution is, but is it really that? And is it really going to provide the value that it says it is? And is it really going to be around in 2 years after you spend all this time trying to implement it? So there's a lot of things we look at. Is it safe, right? So those are all important things.
Yeah. What piece of that puzzle do you feel that you encounter right now versus when you were CMIO, for example, at UCLA, or, like, you know, Topher Sharp, fantastic human being, one of my favorite people at Stanford too, like yourself, is your colleague who's the chief medical information officer. Which parts of the, you know, food chain, if you will, do you guys work on around these questions of technology adoption in the medical system?
Yeah. So, you know, Topher's very involved in kind of all of our strategy and looking at these things. And, you know, when I look at my leadership team, and based on where a potential technology would fit, that's kind of how we would evaluate it. Because that's where the expertise is. And so if something kind of passes the first gate and it looks like it could be a potential to provide value for us, then we would bring in more people throughout the IT organization to say, hey, is this really going to work? Let's dive into the details and see if it's going to be a value add. You know, when we can't buy everything, it would be too expensive. We've got too many things to maintain. It'd be too confusing for people. So we really have to, you know, choose wisely when we're looking at technologies.
How does the job description compare between the CIO and the CMIO?
So the CMIO is really focused on the clinical experience and the patient experience and kind of the patient care side of the house. Often can be more involved in thinking through the projects and, you know, ensuring that the technologies that our physicians are interacting with are providing value. The CIO role is a little bit broader, and I don't think gets into some of the details that the CMIO role would get into. But you know, both are very necessary in these kind of organizations for us to really deliver value with information technology.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wanted to pivot to another dimension around technology adoption, which is around payments and incentives. Mm-hmm. Many academic medical centers are largely still fee-for-service, and consequently, the incentive structures, talking to Topher a little bit about this, maybe, you know, it is different from, you know, when you're at risk or when you have to cap, you know, there's technology involved in capturing outcomes metrics, making sure your organization is hitting HEDIS outcome points and CAP surveys and so forth.
Right.
Do you think that value-based care business models are necessarily more conducive to the technology innovations that we need in healthcare, or do you think it doesn't really matter? Like, do you think there's solutions out there where you're like, well, if I was in a different life or in a different system or a different time, maybe this would have made sense, but it really doesn't make sense for us or the time and place right now?
What I've seen is that when you try to put in technologies that are very specific to say, we're going to solve value-based care, we're going to focus on this, and you're carving out the patient population, it gets very confusing to providers and patients and who's in what system, and we're only going to use this system for this. Or, you know, I think the more you can do the right thing for the patients and build that in to your technologies or use technologies that will do that, the more successful you're going to be. I've seen a lot of systems or technology solutions try to solve a very small problem in a bigger problem, and it often fails because it's really hard. I mean, when you're seeing patients in the clinic, you want to take the best care of patients, you know, guideline, evidence-based care. You know, you're not going to say, well, this is a value-based, you know, this one's in a value-based plan, and this one's in this plan, and this one's in this plan. Ideally, I mean, you have to keep that in mind because that's how the systems work, but fundamentally, like, we want to provide, you know, the right care to the right people. So I really think the platforms need to work like that, as opposed to a specific thing for, you know, patients in a value-based care plan, so to speak.
That's a really interesting perspective, because there's so many companies that are, some have been interviewed on this podcast, that say that, hey, our technology solution is going to get rid of doctor's appointments, and that only works in a PMPM model, in an at-risk model, in a some kind of a, like, you know, this technology only can survive and be sold in that kind of model. But it sounds like, if from your perspective and your vantage of the health system, if it's helping the patient and it does reduce costs or maybe reduces encounters and those E&M codes, it doesn't really matter. Although I guess Stanford also has like an unlimited demand situation where, you know, could always fill those appointments up anyway. But it sounds like really just keep that North Star and maybe it all works out just the same.
I think so. I mean, there are definitely areas where, you know, niche solutions are going to be successful. But I always get back to, like, what problem are you trying to solve, right? And if it's, like, so complicated that, you know, the only way this is going to work is if this work, then it just doesn't work. You know, anytime you do things, for example, outside of the platforms that providers use on a daily basis, it doesn't work. And this is, you know, over and over, you put analytics in a platform that no one sees, no one looks at the analytics. So it's so much of it is really what I like to just basically say is usability and simplicity. I mean, no matter what the solution is, it should feel seamless. And it should be focused on providing the providers the information they need and the patients the care they need, regardless of all of the nuances that happen in healthcare. I mean, that's what I really look for. If it's like, oh, well, this is only going to work for this particular patient population, this particular system on this particular platform on Thursdays, that's not going to work very well. You know, and so, and it's expensive and it's time consuming to implement and maintain. So we tend to look at platforms. We tend to look at solutions that are going to be easy to use and integrated. Those are the things that are really important to me.
From your vantage, what do you see as the greatest accelerants and barriers towards the right type of innovation there in healthcare?
It's a very complex environment. There's so many complexities. The data is not complete and or necessarily good in some cases. So you're relying on incomplete data sets that you know, may actually have the wrong information in it. So those are really, you know, challenging things. You mentioned that access is a problem and hospitals are running at capacity, and there's, you know, challenges associated with that. So I think those are some of the big issues when we're talking about, okay, how do you implement technology in healthcare? Also, you know, the solutions have to, you know, not be duplicative. A lot of solutions say we can do something better than, say, the solution you have in place. And how much better? And is it worth doing the entire change management process and putting in a whole new solution for the hopes of getting a little bit better? And that could be a really big mistake, and it could be very costly. So those are some of the things I think about.
Yeah, we actually say this all the time in venture too, is if your solution is trying to be better and replace something, it better be at least an order of magnitude for somebody even to start to pay attention. Otherwise, sure, it could be better, but, you know, there's risks, and like you said, absolutely, the company may not be around, change management, costs of implementation, all the hidden costs. Mm-hmm. And so this might be a good time to pivot to this other question we were touching base before, that I think so many people, I think, would love to get your take on, is, do you have advice to the many tech and health tech entrepreneurs out there who are looking to sell some SaaS product or tech-enabled service product to a large health system? What have you seen that works well, and what falls flat?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think if you ask, you know, one CIO, you get one answer. You ask 10 CIOs, you'll get 15 answers. So this is my take on it. First and foremost, like, we're in healthcare because of the mission, you know, not to make money, but for the mission. And so if you're a tech company and you want to be in healthcare, it's got to be about the mission. And we can tell, I can tell what the underlying motives are. And so that's number one. I mean, you have to want to help patients and providers do the right thing. And it can't just be about the money. So that's really important. Second thing is, you know, we can also see through exorbitant claims of, you know, value, right? I had one company pitched to me that their solution reduced provider time by, they gave back 30% of the day back to providers. That's impossible with that solution. And there was no way that could happen. If that were true, that solution would be everywhere yesterday, right? If I implement X and every clinician gets 30% of their time back, I mean, that's a no-brainer. So, you know, what is the real value of the solution? What does it really do? Not, you know, have it not make stuff up or exaggerate what the value of the solutions is. Third is, you know, I hear you can implement this in five hours. This is super easy. You know, we've integrated into every EHR. Be realistic about what it's going to take to do this. And anytime there's data involved, you know, mapping data is really, really critical, and it's hard to do. So, you know, be realistic of what it takes to implement the product. And then, you know, this is kind of going about back to the beginning of, you know, why are you in this? But what are the values of the company? Do you think about health equity? Do you think about sustainability? Do you think about, you know, cost to health systems? To, you know, are you taking into account all of these things in your company and how you think about your product? And those are all really important things as well. So that's an, those are a couple things. There's probably more. But those are really important.
That's incredible advice. And I think it comes down to just having humility and doing your homework around your market and your area and what you're trying to do. Curious if you find, since most of our audience tends to be physicians, if you find people with medical training tend to have a little bit more insight around these questions, or if you've seen common blind spots or assumptions that take place.
Yeah, I want to see a partnership. So if there's clinical leadership, say I'm a tech company, how much is that clinical leader connected to the technical leader? And do I see that synergy happening? That's really important, because without the technology side of it, it's not going to work. You can tell me this is the greatest thing ever from a clinician point of view, but it all needs to come together. So how much is that working? That relationship is also important, because feedback is going to come in from, you know, clinicians or providers or whoever's using the product back to usually the forward-facing side or front-facing side of the company. How much is the technology side of the company willing to listen to the feedback and make the product better? That's also important too. So I look for that kind of, you know, relationship. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's particular blind spots, but more like, is there truly a high functioning leadership team that takes into account all aspects of, you know, that the technology, or does it seem pretty siloed? So that's kind of how I would look at that.
Yeah, that's really, really great advice. Think about the other dimension of this and your role developing the wisdom around how to evaluate these technologies and bringing it to your health system. What are your thoughts on the bioinformatics fellowships that are emerging that are out there? What kind of training do they provide? And do you think that they are helpful in assessing some of these questions that you encounter or that the system encounters?
So I think informatics is for everyone. And it's incredibly fun. And there's so much you can do with it. And I think depending on your level of interest would determine, you know, how much more training you want to do. But I don't think you absolutely need training to do an informatics project. But the training really allows you to dive deep into understanding informatics. And I think all of the options are great opportunities, and it really just depends on, you know, your interest and your career path. So the fellowships are, you know, phenomenal. We have a fellowship here at Stanford. The program director is Natalie Pagler, and she runs an outstanding program. And so that's a great, you know, opportunity to really dive deep and use that as a springboard for a career in informatics. But that doesn't mean, you know, if you don't do a fellowship, that doesn't mean you can't do informatics projects. In fact, most projects these days, when we're looking at quality improvement or operational improvements, involve informatics and IT. It just has to. And so that's pretty exciting. The other thing I would say is having some level of literacy around analytics and data is also really, really helpful. This is going to be transformative for healthcare. We've collected lots and lots of data, and I think we're on the path now of starting to think about how we use that data differently from, you know, the way we currently do.
Yeah, we just appointed a chief data officer, I believe, at Stanford too, right?
Chief data scientist, yeah.
Chief data scientist.
So we're really trying to think about how do you take data science and apply it to healthcare, you know, for real, whether it's artificial intelligence and machine learning, whether it's precision medicine, pharmacogenomics. I mean, all of these things really the challenge is implementing it, scaling it, delivering the insights to whoever needs them at the right time in the health system, and then making sure they continue to provide accurate insights. Very, very different than creating a model, for example. I mean, creating a model is one thing, but it's a very small piece of the puzzle when you really think about, say, AI in healthcare.
How do you approach build versus buy when it comes to these informatics opportunities? Because I'd imagine that a lot of these questions and efforts are common across health systems. And if you innovate at Stanford around this, perhaps it would be a scalable innovation, or maybe an idiosyncratic one. Do you encounter this question sometimes, and like how you would like put resources to it versus just take something off the shelf?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's build versus buy, but then there's this kind of middle layer, which is configure. So we will often buy platforms, but those platforms offer incredible configurability. And so it's not so much that you need to buy everything, and it's not that you need to build everything. It's that you create environments, platforms that allow you to then configure, build in those platforms, leverage those platforms really to do what it is you need to do. So, for example, the platforms that can deliver predictions and insights from AI models, we're not going to build them homegrown. We're going to put together platforms and infrastructure that make this all happen and deliver it to the right place. Now, the models themselves, you would put in the platform, right? So you could, in theory, buy a model, I guess. You could create the model yourself. You could share models, but the models, have to be retrained and tested on, your environment. So you need the platforms to be able to do that. And so that's really what we're thinking is how do you do that at scale, in a rapid way. And so that's what we're really looking to our chief data scientist, our chief enterprise architect, as well as the whole IT department really to drive that. And I think that's where we're really going to start to see big wins in using models in healthcare.
Yeah, that's so insightful. And here in Silicon Valley, we have such an incredible talent pool to help work on these problems. Actually, curious, we touched upon this a little bit before too. How do you find yourself competing for that talent? Is it a curse? Is it a blessing?
Depends on the market. I mean, right now it's fairly positive for us. In general, it is hard to find talent because there's so many opportunities. It goes back to the culture that we want to have in the IT department and the culture of the organization and our missions. And we have a lot of people that come from, technology backgrounds and companies that fall in love with the mission of healthcare. And it's really special. So they're part of our organization. And so it's a combination of all of those things. But yes, we're always, looking for talented people to come and join what we're trying to do, which is, make life better for people.
Where might, from your vantage, you like to see Stanford's role in the local startup ecosystem, specifically Stanford Healthcare, and just the innovation around healthcare and where it's situated? Where do you think would be a good way for Stanford to interact with that ecosystem, and what might be something to be cautionary around?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I mean, we're really fortunate here to have lots of accelerators and incubators at Stanford. So Stanford Medicine Catalyst is a phenomenal program that takes...
Yeah, that's it. a great new initiative that came up just these last few years.
And so we love that as a way to help us kind of prioritize where we should put our resources in really transformative ideas and technology solutions. Now, not everything that comes out of Stanford Medicine Catalyst is technology solution, but those that are, you know, we partner to, you know, bring them into the health ecosystem. So that's one way I think we're really fortunate at Stanford to be able to have that pipeline. And then, you know, I think Stanford is an amazing ecosystem for startups that have, you know, a really great idea that solves a problem we have, that has the, you know, devotion to the mission highest on their list, to really test and partner those ideas. And it's really the partner part is really key, that, you know, willing to take feedback, willing to iterate in order to make it work, as opposed to here it is and put it in. So, and sometimes, you know, a lot of times that's fine. We'll go to market and say, this is what we're looking for. And companies will submit their proposals, and we'll choose a company to do a particular thing that we want to do. But when it comes to the startup space, it's got to be flexible. It's got to be much more of a partnership. But yeah, I think there's great opportunities. There's lots of examples, I think, at Stanford of those kind of partnerships being successful. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very grateful for that. I mean, whereas at medical school at Hopkins, there's so much incredible research and talent and smart minds and people who are super mission driven, but then it sort of doesn't exit the walls of the institution. And I feel grateful that Stanford's very nurturing in that way. My last question for you, Mike, that I'm now asking everybody at the end of the podcast to see how different people with their different perspectives and life experiences approach, which is just thinking about the U.S. healthcare system, it's good and bad and everything in between. What's something about U.S. healthcare that gives you hope, that you're excited about? And what's one thing that you wish could be different if you had the power to change, you might want to change?
Well, what gives me hope is that there's a lot of conversations going on about how we can make things better. And it kind of goes back to that change question you had. I do think that we are able to change, and we are able to harness new ideas and new technologies. So I am very hopeful. And the other thing I think is pretty exciting is I think we are going to see the start of using data and AI and automation to really start to transform from the digitization we talked about to digital. And so I'm very, very excited about that. What I would change is I think there's misaligned incentives and in many of them, you know. And so how do we reconcile misaligned incentives so that we can start to have some alignment? And that would make things a lot better, I think. So there's many examples of that, you know, that we talk about the transition to value-based care. It really hasn't happened, but the incentives are, you know, do more, you get paid more. But that's the wrong incentive. And I think, you know, for the most part, clinicians are more interested or would be happier, you know, being able to provide the level of care they'd like to provide, as opposed to how many patients can they see as fast as they possibly can. So I think there's a lot of misaligned incentives, and it'd be nice if we could start to really change that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Mike, Dr. Pfeffer, it has been a privilege. Thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to be able to share your story and journey with our audience.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so much fun and an honor to be on this podcast. And I hope, if anything, that we've had an opportunity to inspire our young physicians to go into informatics and really think about data science. I think there's just tremendous opportunity. It's exciting. It's challenging, but it is the future. And I do hope that people take that opportunity.
That does it for this episode of The Doctor Is Out. Thanks for joining us. If you have any suggestions, feel free to reach out to us at info@tdio.org.